Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And this is episode number 144. We are going to be talking about the Red Pyramid chapter 41 today, the final chapter in the book, which Yay! Is super exciting.
It is really exciting.
And, you know, some final thoughts on the book, some predictions about the next book, all the usual stuff, some news thrown in there and everything. You know, Kristen and I just had a catching up session before we jumped on the podcast, and life is chaotic right now. Set is out doing his thing. Maybe Apophis is up there in the sky. I don't know. Everything is just so chaotic. And
it's so true.
Life is hard sometimes.
So my mom was supposed to retire last week on Thursday. It was supposed to be her last day.
Yeah.
She works in the cafeteria at a high school. So, like, she's been going for long enough. Like, it's time. And she was very excited to be a grandma. I think we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
So, like, she's excited to watch my niece and, like, all that. Well, I bought her a retirement gift that I was telling her, like, hey, I'm stopping. Is it okay if I stop by this afternoon after this podcast recording? To, like, drop it off and, you know, maybe say hi or whatever. And she was like, yeah, but, you know, I'm not actually retired yet. And I was like, what? Like, this was supposed to be done on Thursday. What are you talking about? Well, apparently one of the ladies is out on, like, their 2 weeks of vacation, and they come back this week. And so they asked my mom to come in Monday to help them do a little bit of prep. So she's going in for 2 hours on Monday.
Okay.
And then she's supposed to be done.
Okay.
And it's like, is this done, though?
Yeah.
Or are you going to end up being like, oh, when they're really in trouble and they're on call, and they're like, oh, can you come in for... No. You're retired.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Take my mom as a lesson. She decided when she was retiring, and that was it. Fully embraced the life. Didn't look back. Doesn't miss it. Is so happy now that she's retired. And I'm like, good, because her job was... She worked in, like, a doctor's office. She did, like, front desk stuff and, like, accounting type stuff sometimes. But, like, you know, between all the personalities behind, you know, the window, and then all the people coming in sick and not feeling good, like, it just can weigh down on you.
Definitely.
And she was definitely ready to retire.
Well, and, like, my mom doesn't have a ton of hobbies. Like, her hobbies were raising her children.
Yeah.
And so, like, my mom doesn't have a ton of stuff she does. She likes to play games on her iPad and, like, watch movies and stuff, but, like, you know, nothing that you can buy, like, accoutrement for.
Yeah.
Like, no hobbies like that. And so I was, like, racking my brain trying to remember, like, what we did as kids that she enjoyed, like, you know. So I ended up getting her one of those puzzle boards.
Oh, right, yeah.
That has the little drawers for, like, you can organize your pieces, and, like, it has, like, a cover that you can put on it. So you can put the cover on it and then, like, slide it under the bed or, like, wherever it'll hide. But this one also has feet that come out, so you can fold them up and it'll, like, rotate like a Lazy Susan.
Oh, cool.
Or you can unfold the feet and it'll work like a table.
Yeah.
It's not, like, table height, it's, like, mini table height.
Right.
So I feel like even if she uses it for games with Rory in a couple years, or if they play toys on it or something, like, it still could come in handy.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, I'm gonna do that. And I ended up getting her a couple of puzzles to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I'm hoping that this goes over well, and that she's like, yeah, I love puzzles. She was doing jigsaw puzzles on her iPad last weekend while we were watching the Lions game. Like, she was sitting right in front of me, and I was watching her, like, try to, like, put a puzzle together on, and I'm like, okay. That was, I had already made the decision of what I was getting her, but I was like, okay, that might be it. So I'm really, really hoping she likes it. We'll find out today.
I miss doing puzzles. You and I used to do puzzles quite often.
We did.
And I just don't really do them anymore. I think I'm always trying to find stuff that helps, just, like, is kind of a thoughtless thing that you can do. I like coloring a lot. I've been coloring quite often. And that's been really fun. But I do kind of miss doing puzzles.
I love them. They just take up so much space.
Yeah.
That I feel like that's the reason I don't do more of them.
Yeah.
But maybe someday when my kitchen table is actually clean. My kitchen table's never cleared.
We don't even have a kitchen table, so there's that.
So there's that.
I have a question for you and all of our listeners who have, like, fancy bookshelves of books with, like, all your special editions and all the things you collect. How often do you, like, rearrange them? Because I feel like I do mine, like, every couple of months. I'm currently in the process. I got more of my author copies, so, like, they're all sitting up there.
Very nice.
And then I was like, okay, that means that I have to move, like, my Katie Robert collection down a shelf, which means that all of these books over here that were on that shelf need to go somewhere else. And, like, how often do you, like, actually have to rearrange stuff? Because I feel like I always need to.
Okay, so I have a problem. That's the first step, right?
We have talked about our problems before.
I have literally filled my bookshelf so full that there are two stacks deep, and it is flush. There is nowhere to put anything. It is full. And so now I just have stacks on the floor. Oh. I have one next to the bookshelf that comes up to about halfway. It's so tall. And then I've been starting to put them in tubs because my husband's father built a giant bookshelf for my office that eventually is going in there. But they were going to, like, tear out my carpet because it's so old. They were going to tear out the carpet and put down, like, the, like, snap-in laminate flooring.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Like, the floating wood floor kind of thing. They were going to do that and, like, paint for me and put up some new trim and, like, just basically give it a little once-over.
Mm-hmm.
Because my office is just crazy. It's... Our pantry for the house is in my closet, like in the bedroom behind me, in my office. So it's like I'm constantly dealing with groceries that are not getting put away that are just like stranded in my office because they need to go back in the little pantry closet, but there's no room in there.
Yeah.
And everything's falling over and they're going to put more shelves in there for us so we can organize that better. Uh-huh. And like, but... Then his brother had to go and have a baby 3 weeks early. So we don't know when that's going to happen. So in the meantime, I'm just in a holding pattern. So I need to get all of my books out of my current bookshelf and put them in totes so that they're safe during whenever construction decides to happen.
Yeah.
And so I kind of started working on that like a month or two ago, but I've since kind of hit a stopping point because we knew they weren't going to be over at our place anytime soon.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, it needs to get done. I need to get them out of the bookshelf. I also have seen so many horror stories lately about people getting mold and book lice that I am terrified that I'm going to take stuff off my shelf and, like, cry.
Yeah.
Because they are packed in there right now. And I know you're supposed to let books breathe. I know you're supposed to put room behind them. But, like, I didn't have any room left.
Yeah.
So I am a little bit scared to take everything off my shelf. Like, we have air conditioning. Our house is pretty cool most of the time. So I'm not super worried. I don't think our house is, like, balmy where there's a lot of mold growth and stuff. We don't get a lot of mold in the bathroom, really. It's, you know, so it's like, I think we're okay. But, yeah, so we're crossing our fingers that eventually, someday, I will get mine to look really pretty. Right now, it is not pretty at all.
So, to answer my question, your answer would be, it will never be settled. Good luck.
My answer is, back when I had not a completely packed to the gills bookshelf, yes, I moved stuff around all the time.
Yeah.
Because I enjoyed, like, taking things. I used to do it with my movies all the time. Do you remember seeing me in the living room surrounded by my movies?
Yeah.
Because I decided to change them from alphabetical to by genre or alphabetical by genre or whatever. I love doing that sort of stuff. So, like, yes, reorganizing my books was always kind of zen for me. Like, oh, I'm going to, instead of doing it this way, I want to try doing it this way. I'm going to do it by height order, but by genre so that things are kind of together, but also alphabetical, but not, you know.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I love reorganizing my bookshelves, my movies, like, that sort of stuff. But, yeah, it just, right now, is not feasible. I need to work on that. So, yeah, I don't think it's abnormal, especially if you are a book person.
Yeah.
Touching the books, being amongst the books, just makes, it gives you peace.
Yeah.
I get some days when I'm just completely overloaded, all I need to do is go get a tea from Barnes & Noble, wherever the cafe is or whatever, get a tea, walk around. I don't even have to buy anything. I just need to walk around and be amongst the books.
Yeah.
And not have anyone bother me and put my music in and just walk around the store and, like, drink my tea and look, you know, read the backs of things, take pictures because, oh, I need to read that. And
yeah.
And then go home. And I feel, like, immensely better at the end of that sometimes. So it's like, I get it. I get it. Sometimes you just need to be amongst the books.
Yeah. Hopefully... Well, my best friends in the whole entire world are going to be here next week. First time they're ever visiting Ohio.
Yeah.
Even though I've begged them a million times.
We lived together for how many years?
I know.
They never came.
Yeah. To be fair to them, they have a dog and a cat. Their dog is riddled with anxiety. So, and they both have, you know, jobs. I have a very flexible schedule as a writer. So, like, it's just easier for me to fly to them.
Definitely.
But I finally convinced them to come out here, which is good timing considering Callie, who's still doing okay, by the way, if you listen to our last episode. She's, you know, she's not 100%, but she's still hanging in there and eating and wants cuddles. She slept with me the other night on my chest, like, the whole night, which is not super comfortable, but I wasn't going to move her, so...
As Sam, right before we started recording, she wandered past the room and was, like, yelling at us.
Yeah,
like,
and that was a long meow, too. She had some stuff to say. So, yeah, so I want to, like... You know, my bookshelves are a mess, and I kind of want to clean them up before Deidre and Kayla get here. So,
yeah.
That's currently what I'm trying to do. And
well, it looks good so far. I see that it is still a work in progress.
Yes.
But the progress you've made looks pretty solid.
Thank you. I never thought I was going to be the kind of person to turn my books around basically backwards. But with some of the stained edges the way that they are, like, you can't not do that. They're just, that's like the whole point. They're so pretty.
Yeah, that's part of the reason why I haven't fully done mine is I can't decide how I want to do it.
Yeah.
But the majority of the ones I think that I have stained edges for... I think I have duplicates, so I can put one with the spine out and then one with the edges out so that it's like, oh, I can see what that
book would
is.
Be cool, yeah.
So, I'm not sure, but I think that's kind of how it goes. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and Kevin's at Costco right now getting us some, storage, like, shelves to put down in the basement so that we could, like, start storing things down there and move things around. And I'm weirdly excited about that.
Yeah,
so,
thank you.
You know, if you want to talk to us about storage units and shelves, if you want to talk to us about books in your bookshelves,
please send us library selfies.
Yes.
If you have the best, like,
shelfies.
You know, shelfies. Yeah, but if you have, like, an amazing home library or, like, a little reading nook or whatever,
yeah.
We would be happy to see any of that for inspiration.
Yes, and I'll still take pictures of your animals. We did have somebody write in with a picture of their cat, and I'm so excited to show you.
Oh, yay!
And if you want to talk to us about how chaotic life is, you know, we're here to listen. And there was some other stuff that we talked about, but I don't really remember what it was now because my head is full of things. But you can do all of that by contacting us at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Instagram or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. We are not timely in our responses, but we do always reply eventually.
It happens, just not on any particular
very
schedule.
Slowly, yeah. We have a couple pieces of news to go over. Not anything too crazy except for one piece that I'm sure everybody's seen already.
Yes.
But just wanted to go through a few things. And we'll just kick it off with the big one, which is that Kate McKinnon has been cast as Aphrodite in Percy Jackson. She will be a recurring guest star.
Okay.
We did not see this coming.
Who could have?
Yeah.
No one.
Did not see this coming.
She's
honestly
not who I would have thought they were looking for Aphrodite.
And so when I first saw it, I was like, ooh, I don't know about this. This is maybe the first casting that I was like, really? But the more I thought about it, the more I thought about, like, Aphrodite being this, like, really dramatic, over-the-top, like, kind of comedic goddess,
mm-hmm.
she would be amazing at that. Also, she's beautiful.
Yes.
Not to get into too many details, but my bisexual awakening may have been her in the Ghostbusters movie licking the gun. That I was like, oh yes, okay, I do like women. So, you know, I'm not gonna argue with it.
Yeah.
It works for me, clearly. So
right. No, she's a very pretty girl. She's so funny and over the top and yeah. awkward that I think that distracts from the fact that she's actually like a very pretty girl. And I'm excited to see her take on something like this where Aphrodite is, you know, meant to be the goddess of love.
Mm-hmm.
And with that comes a certain amount of, like, attraction and all of that. Like, how are they planning to dress this goddess? How are they going, yeah. like, how, what are they thinking? 'Cause she is definitely not my first choice. But honestly, yeah, if this is the direction they're going, that she's so kind of over the top about her, you know, about love and being the goddess yeah. of love, and like she's just so enamored with herself, it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. And I think yeah. Kate McKinnon is going to be absolutely fantastic. I love her so much.
Yeah.
Just time and time again, she pops into SNL for something and just blows it out of the park. And, like, every movie I've seen her in, she is just insane, and I love it. So. Yeah.
I mean, she's a very talented actor. And definitely. I feel like she can play a lot of different, like, personalities and roles and stuff. And she is super funny. And, I mean, the Percy Jackson books, the gods aren't supposed to be really serious and right. everything. Like, they are kind of ridiculous. And if they're going to lean into that, especially with her, I think it could really work. And I wanted to mention, per the official character description, Aphrodite can alter her appearance depending on the beholder. So I feel like that's kind of an important thing to keep in mind. And must be sure that Percy Jackson respects the power and importance of love before she agrees to offer aid on his quest. And we know that, like, they were going to have this meeting, that this is kind of the point in the book series where Percy's like, Annabeth and I are friends, but, oh, maybe I get a little jealous sometimes, and, like, maybe, you know, I don't really want to admit it, but I do think of her as, like, maybe I would want her to be my girlfriend or whatever. And Aphrodite kind of pushes that,
yeah.
like, storyline, that plot point along, and I really like that. So, very interested in seeing how they handle this.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm excited to hear what you guys think about this, because, again, she's not, wouldn't have been anyone I would have guessed.
Totally out of left field.
Yeah, but I think she's going to be brilliant with this. It's going to be a lot of fun to see her as Aphrodite.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. You're right, though. I am very curious about how they're going to dress her. Is she going to be, like, in ball gowns all the time? Is she going to be very high fashion and sleek? Is she going to wear, like, a goddess, like, toga kind
right?
of thing?
Like, they have a lot of options.
Yeah.
She could definitely go any of those routes. They could really do, like, almost like a Renaissance, like, you know, flowy gown with the drapey mm-hmm. sleeves and, like, long flowing hair. Like, there's lots of ways that they could represent Aphrodite. And I'm trying to remember, is it the third book that it's Aphrodite and Ares and they kind of meet them on the highway? Because I know they meet Ares on the highway in, like, season one, but I have this vision of, like, Aphrodite and Ares together, and I feel like there's a...
I think Aphrodite is in the limo, right?
Yes.
Right after they go through, like, the junkyard.
That's what... Yeah.
I don't okay. know if we see her and Ares together, because remember, Hephaestus was trying to...
Maybe my brain is switching Hephaestus and Ares too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because, like, I just have this, like, she's not, we see her by herself in the limo, but then I feel like we see her with other gods, mm-hmm. like, a couple of times too in book three. So, yeah. I'm very intrigued to see how they handle this.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you're, you know, if you think back to the gods we've seen so far, they've been dressed pretty normally.
Mm-hmm.
But she is very, it's love, it's appearance, it's mm-hmm. attraction, it's, you know, so it's like she's going to be very focused on the display as well.
Yeah.
So I feel like her costuming is going to tell a lot about how they want
to show her. I feel like they could have a lot of fun with it. And honestly, like, I kind of want them to go wild with their wardrobe and have, like, a million outfit changes. Like, every time we see her, she's in a new outfit. That would be so cool.
It would be fun.
I would love it.
Especially if she's changing appearance based on the beholder. Like, if, you know, whoever's there, like, maybe her outfit changes subtly, like, it changes from one kind of style to another style, but it's the same material or the same pattern or something, you know. Like, it'd be cool to kind of see,
Yeah. Also, I don't think this happens in the book, but God, I want to see Mr. D and Aphrodite together just because those two, Jason Mantzoukas
unstoppable.
And Kate McKinnon would be hilarious together.
Like, let's figure out a way.
Yeah, let's just write it in there.
Let's make this happen.
We can do it.
I need this.
Yeah. You saw a couple of clips come across your social media of season 3 filming. We got Percy and Blackjack. It was, you know, a black horse. And Percy and Nico, it looks like Percy's chasing after him.
Yeah, like, the first clip was literally someone, like, on their college campus where apparently they're filming. And she was walking to class and got stopped. And, like, she just kind of points her phone at this, like, archway, and you see Percy / Walker walk up into the, like, into the archway almost, and then there's this black horse next to him, and you're like, wait a minute. So she was, like, just walking to class, and suddenly I run into these guys, like, hey. So, like, that was just, I saw that one first, and I was like, that's so random, like, that's really cool, and I'm like, they must be shooting season 3, this is clearly Blackjack, like, that's exciting, I'm glad we're actually, you know, seeing a bit of this, and Blackjack looked great.
Yeah.
But yeah, then the second clip popped up, it looks like it's gotta be Nico, is getting out of a car, and then Percy chases after him. And Nico is wearing what looks to be an orange shirt.
Yeah.
But it's hard to tell if it's just, like, that's the color he was wearing or whether it's supposed to be a Camp Half-Blood shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So, not really sure where in the story they're filming this yet, but interesting nonetheless. So, we'll include links to those in the show notes so you guys can see them, too.
Yeah. Very cool. I always love seeing that kind of stuff.
And
especially,
I mean,
when it doesn't, like, give away any spoilers, which we would already know anyway, but...
Well, and that is just proof that season 3 is filming.
Yes.
Like, we knew they were, but here's even more proof of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, the Court of the Dead tour has wrapped up and everything, and I just saw some comments on the Nerd Daily website that I thought were kind of cool. Basically, they did an interview with Mark Ashiro and Rick Riordan, and they both had some comments on their collaboration. Mark said, Rick and I both feel very lucky that our writing processes are similar. We wrote a detailed outline of what we wanted in the book and then wrote the manuscript. Because this was our second outing, the process felt even more in sync. I come from journalism. I don't have a huge ego around my writing. I'm used to it being edited and being changed, so I don't know that we've ever had a disagreement. It becomes so convoluted in terms of who wrote what that we often can't determine who wrote a specific sentence. We both approach this with humility, curiosity, and wanting to write a fun adventure, which meant we were always kind of one-upping each other. And then Rick comes in and says, I was thinking the closest thing I can compare it to is like improvisational jazz, when you just sort of have the general key and you have the chord patterns, but everything else is kind of up for grabs, you know? It's like, yeah, that's awesome. Do that again. Okay, all right. I can riff off of that. And I just wanted to mention that because we knew that their collaboration was pretty smooth, that both of them, like, even Rick, like, you know, he could feel very protective of this character who is, you know, a fan favorite hands down of this world. And he really let Mark walk through those doors and kind of do what he wanted to do. And just hearing them say, like, kind of how easy it was, how they riff off of each other. I just love reading about that whenever it comes up.
Well, and I find it really exciting that they didn't just do it once. They've done it twice now.
Yeah.
And it was even easier the second time, it sounds like, because they had, you know, they knew each other's tendencies. They had done this before, so it's like falling back into that pattern. And this is a totally different way to write a book. Like, we've seen, Mark has written very successful books. Rick has written very successful books. doing it together is a different skill.
Mm-hmm.
Like, figuring out how to co-write a book is a different skill. And they've clearly got that down now, too. So it's like, this flexes a different muscle. And as a writer, I'm sure it helps a lot to be able to flex a muscle that's a little different than what you do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
Shakes things up, just gets you thinking differently. So if anything, this is just going to make them both better and happier and keep the creative juices flowing, because they're working with, you know, someone that's not them in an office typing all day long, you know. So, yeah, I'm just excited to see, like, now that they've done this, and they've done it twice, and both have seemed to be very successful. I have not read Court of the Dead yet, but we'll get there. You know, it seems like they've had no problems doing it, and it's come across to the fans as being, you know, absolutely incredible. Like, fans loved Son in the Star, and haven't heard a whole lot of responses to Court of the Dead yet, but I've kind of been avoiding them, so... Yeah. But, like, it doesn't... I haven't heard anything bad about it or anything like that, so I'm just excited to see what this could mean. Like, I'm sure if it works, sticking with it and, like, saying, hey, you know, if we ever have another idea... Mm-hmm. I'm always up for another, like, if, you know, if it's a different character or something else, like, that would be really cool.
It's so funny you say that, because the other thing I pulled from this article was about future projects, in which Mark said, yeah, we're both not planners. I get why some creatives are, but we are not generally ones who plan 10 years in advance. A couple of weeks ago, I turned in my next young adult book, which is a horror novel, and I'm very excited, but that's a year and a half out. Right now, I'm excited about The Court of the Dead finally coming out. And Rick adds, there's no grand plan. This is in regards to, like, you know, the Nico books in particular.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no grand plan. We're making this up as we go along. We wrote the first book because it was just something we were very excited about. The second book came from talking about ideas we thought were so fun that we couldn't wait to put them down. So if something like that comes along again, I'm sure we'll jump on the phone and have that conversation. But it'll be organic and it'll be natural, I hope. And honestly, I love this answer, because the worst thing is, like, an author who kind of just keeps pushing to, like, extend a series when you can tell it's just not there anymore, that they should have ended it, you know, 3-4 books ago.
Yeah.
And I love that, like, they're not I mean, as somebody who, frankly, is a little OCD, maybe more than a little, the idea of, like, you know, this should be a trilogy. Like, they have 2 books. They need to write a 3rd one. Like, my brain goes there. But I kind of love that they're just like, if we never write another one, fine. But if we come up with an idea, yeah, it's definitely on the table. And to me, I think that'll make the story better, that it's something they're excited about.
Well, and if they're writing each one as, like, a standalone, but then they're standalones that work together. So, you know, Son in the Star was standalone. We didn't expect anything more after that. The Court of the Dead comes out, whole new adventure. Like, that's fantastic. We'll read that. When that's done, it's like, if something else comes to them, it will be another 3rd complete story that you can read, standalone. You don't have to read this and then this and then this because there's cliffhangers and secrets and, you know, whatever. It's, no, they're each individual solid stories, and I like that. Mm-hmm. Not everything has to be a traditionally arced grand series, you know, 3 to 5 books and all that. Like, I like that this is kind of how they're handling this, especially because it's so hard just figuring out their scheduling, I'm sure. They both have so much going on that I'd rather them not put pressure on it and just, when it happens, it happens.
Right.
When they've both got time and there's something that needs to be written, let's do it, you know? So it's how you keep authors from resenting their own work and their own characters. And, you know, sometimes I feel like there are authors who kill characters because they get frustrated.
I mean, yeah, I 100% think that's true. And, you know, as a Rick Riordan fan, we are eating well these days. It's not like, you know, we're not getting other stuff, even though I love Nico. Like, we're still getting plenty of other things. Speaking of which, on November 11th, 3 new-ish things are coming out. Percy Jackson and the Olympians Create Your Fate, a coloring book, comes out, and I will link to that specifically. And it looks really cute. I mean, we both love coloring books and stuff like that. And it's not the first Percy Jackson one that's out there, but it is a new one, and I just think that's really fun.
And is this one kind of tied to the show?
I don't know. That's a good question. To be honest, I did not look super closely. Yes, 100%. That is Leo Walker and Arian.
Now that makes more sense, because like the first coloring book, I'm pretty sure was like the first book related.
Yeah.
So it would make sense that if they're kind of starting over at the beginning again, that it would kind of be show.
Right, yeah, 100%. Yeah, it has the Disney Plus original series tag on it. 100 images to inspire creativity. It's about 128 pages long. So that's really awesome. I love the idea that, like, Leah specifically is in there. I mean, Arian, too, you know? Like, it's really cool that their images are in this coloring book.
Yeah.
Percy Jackson and the Olympians, the Sea of Monsters graphic novel with a new cover is also coming out on November 11th, as is Percy Jackson and the Olympians, the Sea of Monsters Disney Plus tie-in edition.
Mm.
I did a very quick search on Amazon to see if I could find links to them. I could not. I'm sure that they're somewhere. I'll track them down and I'll throw them in there if I can find them, but... you know, that's, as a collector, I'm like, must have, but also bookshelves, so maybe we'll hold off until I can rearrange some things.
Yeah.
But that's all the news we have. We're actually recording this a week after the last one, so I'm actually surprised we even had this much to talk about, but if anything else new comes out, within the next week or so, we'll just include it in the following episode. And I guess we need to get to the main event at this point. I mean, it's time to talk about the Red Pyramid chapter 41, the finale.
Okay, so this mini recap is a little long, but it's not super long, and I had a lot to recap, if you remember where we left off. So yes, the Red Pyramid chapter 41, big battle. Sadie transported Set, Carter, the Pyramid, and anyone within about 50 feet or so to DC, removing Set from the desert and reducing his access to power. Once we got to DC, we see them bring Set to his knees pretty quickly, but Sadie also sees that the true enemy is lurking just out of reach. Apophis was using Set to try and return, having possessed Face of Horror to do so. And we also learned that Zia was a Shabti all along, that the Zia we knew was, and that Iskandar put the real Zia into a deep sleep somewhere safe, and as of the end of the last chapter, like, we have no idea where that might be. Yeah. So the, if you remember, that was kind of a big chapter.
Yeah.
AKA, it was the major climax of the book.
Mm-hmm. And some big twists that we did not see coming.
Yeah, a couple of them. Yeah. Okay. So this chapter starts, we find out that Carter gets the last point of view, and he mentions that, I can't believe Sadie's letting me have the last say, which I thought was cute. We talked a lot about the style that they use, and I love how that came alive in this last chapter, both at the beginning of the chapter, where he mentions, like, I can't believe Sadie's letting me have the last laugh, and how he closes the book.
Yeah.
It's very pointed. It's, we're recording this, so I'm sending the recording out, and if you guys get the story, then that means that, you know, if you find the amulet, make sure to come reach us, and hopefully we'll be able to put out more of the story. Like, it's very cool.
Yeah. I love that they were like, Sadie and Carter Kane signing off. And I was like, we do that too.
I know. I was like, we say that too. Yeah. So the whole style, it just works. And it was even more evident in this last chapter as they closed the story off a little bit. So loved that. Okay. So Carter and Sadie use their magic to get out of the National Mall, where everything went down with the Red Pyramid and Set and all of that. But they had to use human transportation to return to the 21st Nome in Brooklyn. It was funny, as this chapter started, my first question was like, where are they going? Mm-hmm. Like, they had to get out of the National Mall, because explosions and whatever was going on. Like, they had to get out of there and out of the way of trouble. But they had Amos with them, and I was like, I wonder what's next. Like, where are they going to go? And, like, obviously the mansion blew up.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't talked about that in a while, but, like, what was left? Like, we had no idea how much of the mansion was really there and rubble, gone, you know, whatever. So I was a little surprised that the first thing they did was head to the 21st Nome in Brooklyn to the mansion, but it does make sense in hindsight that that's the only place to go. It's Amos's home, like, even if it's burnt to a crisp, yeah. Like, they have to figure out what to do with it, yeah. Basically.
Also, thank the gods for magic, because that makes restoration much easier.
Yeah, for sure. But when they got there, they weren't alone, because they were greeted by Khufu.
Yeah.
Who was very, very excited to see them, and forgave Carter for being terrible at basketball, mm-hmm. which I thought was very cute.
Yeah.
And Khufu's been busy himself. He's been doing as much as he could to make the ruins livable. Like, he obviously doesn't have access to magic, so he can't repair things, but was like... When they arrived, they found three little sleeping piles kind of under what's left of the roof in the yeah. one corner. Like, he made them beds for when they returned, and Muffin is all curled up in a little soft spot.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I thought it was really sweet that Khufu, like, was doing everything he could.
It was so cute.
It's like, I know that you're fighting gods, and that you might be a little tired when you get done. So... Come take a rest.
Come sleep amongst the rubble.
Right? Like, that's a great idea. So, Sadie and Carter get to work rebuilding and repairing the mansion pretty much right away. It takes them a long time, several weeks. We learn that Carter is good with the big pieces. He's good with the big blocks, whereas Sadie is really good with detail. So she's the one kind of making sure that the archways are enchanted the right way and that security things are put, you know, all together and all that sort of stuff. But they get it back into living condition. They even repair the terrace and the pool, and they return Philip Macedonia to his rightful place. And I loved the note that Amos, like, almost smiled for
yeah.
that. Because Amos is having a really, really hard time after everything. He doesn't really talk. He just kind of sleeps. And then, you know, it sounds like he comes out to see them, but, like, doesn't really have a lot to say and just kind of is present. He's just going through it. And Sadie and Carter kind of have a conversation about it one night after Amos goes to bed. And Sadie mentions that, like, he was violated by Set. Like, he didn't have a say in any of that. And Set being in his head and doing all the things he was doing and him not being able to stop it was really tough to take, especially mm-hmm. for a magician. And I couldn't not see the parallel to that and, like, sexual abuse.
Yeah.
And how some people have a very hard time of getting past the actual, like, violation mm-hmm. of it and the, you know, not being in control of what happens with yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a very obvious parallel, but it's just strikes you right off the page.
Yeah, I think what Amos went through is really horrible, because not only did Set do this to him, but he made Amos do things to the kids, like, you know, to lead them to the pyramid. I mean, he was manipulating the kids through Amos the entire time, and I'm sure there's a lot of guilt there, especially for somebody who hasn't been a part of their life, but obviously, like, cares about them because they're his family, but
I
just couldn't help but think that the kids never even really knew the real Amos, because Set had been with him basically the whole time. And I'm really curious. We obviously know by the end of the chapter, Amos kind of decides to leave, go back out to the first gnome, try to, like, you know, repair himself, get back to whoever he is. And I'm really curious what his personality will be like come book two, when we actually get to know the real him.
Yeah.
If he's in book two. I assume he is, but I don't know that for sure.
No, I would think he would be somewhat involved in book two, even if he's not there for, like, the majority of it or right. what, you know, whatever. I would think we'd definitely see him again. And yeah, I'm interested to see who Amos is without any of Seth's interference.
Yeah.
So they continue fixing the house, including a statue of Thoth that lost its head. And that was particularly troublesome for Amos. He had a lot of problems, like, seeing it in that state, so...
Yeah, because he's, like, the patron god of magicians, so it felt very much like a bad omen.
Right, yeah. And so they took their time and care putting that back together as well. We learn from Carter that Sadie and Carter are keeping their amulets locked away in a box in the library for safekeeping. Carter checks on them every morning to make sure they're still there, but they both agree that there's a lot of work that they need to do to be stronger, to be better magicians, to understand magic more before they can put them back on and, like, open themselves up to Horus and Isis again.
Yeah.
It's like, I will say, part of the my thinking and all of this is, like, did Horus and Isis kind of take it easy on them because they were brand new and they didn't want to scare them, but now that they've fully merged with them once, will it be harder for Horus and Isis not to try and take over? Mm. And, you know, like, they know what these kids are capable of, and they know what it feels like to be perfectly bonded. Like, I wonder if putting those amulets back on and opening yourself up to that again, like, if it's not like the first time, because the first time you were kids who didn't know what you were doing, we didn't want to overwhelm you, but now you know what you're getting into, and let's, you know, let's do this. Let's do what we can do. Like, I wonder how different that will be when they do finally put the amulets back on. Yeah, because
unfortunately you can't really trust the gods. They're sort of always working to their own ends, and they have their own objectives. And obviously, like, they were pretty good to the kids, pretty understanding when they decided to, like, give up that power. And, you know, they wanted them back, but I think they were kind of understanding of their choice not to. And, but, like, at the end of the day, like, they're still these supernatural beings with a ton of power who want what they want. And it's kind of this fine, like, this tightrope that you have to walk between, okay, we need the gods, we have to trust them in some capacity, but we can never really let our guards down.
Yeah, it's very, 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 it's a good point. It's very true. You know, in their repairs and all of that, one night, Anubis pays them a visit at dinner and invites them to follow him, and he takes them to the Hall of Judgment in the underworld. I was going to say, you had a point on here.
Yeah, just that that Carter can see him as a human, not the jackal-headed god. And I was wondering why. Like, is that, like, a choice Anubis made? Is that because of, like, what Carter had gone through that he was able to, like, see him in this different capacity? We don't really get an answer to it.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't have had anything to do with Horus, would it?
I don't think so.
It doesn't feel
because
like
Sadie had Isis, right? And, you know,
yeah,
the only thing I can think of, which, like, I'm just gonna pretend this is what's going on, and he's like, okay, actually I really like Sadie, so I need to, like, impress her brother and make him kind of like me. Maybe don't show up as a jackal-headed dude and maybe show up as, like, kind of a hot guy and see, you know, maybe that'll make Carter like me a little more.
I mean, that makes the most sense.
Yeah,
I mean, if you're asking me.
Yeah.
So yeah, he invites them to join him in the Hall of Judgment, and they follow him. And as they're entering the Hall of Judgment this time, it's not as broken and worn down as it was the last time. And the almost like filter that is covering the Hall of Judgment is very reminiscent of their house in LA, the last place that they lived as a family all together. I can't imagine going down to visit where your parents are, because they know where they're going, going down to visit them, and suddenly you're in your living room.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whoo, talk about a head trip.
Yeah, especially because that was the last place where they were a family, so that's going to bring up some big memories.
Right?
And you can tell, like, both Sadie and Carter are, like, shocked, mad, excited, like, just a whirlwind of emotions at this point, and, like, being dropped back into that, like, literal environment from that time can't make it any easier.
Right. I mean, that's the first sign that if they didn't know, their parents are there.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason why their family living room is what they're seeing in the Hall of Judgment. Because a moment later, they look up, and sitting on the throne is Julius.
Yeah.
And as soon as he starts to talk, you kind of get the impression that it's not just Julius, and then he tells you, yes, it's both, I am both Osiris and Julius at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
both and are I present. Just want to say we were right.
Yep.
I mean, I don't think it was a hard guess if you know anything about Egyptian mythology, but we were right that Julius was basically going to take the throne in the underworld.
Yeah. One of the things that kind of jumped out at me was Carter realizing that his dad knew before he struck the Rosetta Stone, he knew that he was going to have to sacrifice himself. Yeah. That Osiris would bind to him and that he was going to have to die. So, like, again, kind of strange that Julius didn't have any sort of, like, this is the last moment. I'm going to be alive with my children on this planet.
Yeah.
I am going to be bound to Osiris and then eventually have to die because I know how this is going to go. Like, there's only one way it can go. And he didn't seem to have, like, that last moment. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he wasn't spending the day kind of making memories for them to reach back on and feel like, oh, that he was trying to. No, he treated that day as regular as he could for mm-hmm. a normal, like, day where they're visiting Sadie, which yeah. was twice a year, you know? Yeah. So it's like, that does burn just a little bit, like, and I'm sure it does for Carter and Sadie as well. But ultimately Julius was trying to do right by them and was trying to put them all in a situation mm-hmm. where good would live out. Where,
and really the alternative, giving them a heads up, what would that have accomplished? It's not like they believed that the Egyptian gods were real. It wouldn't have helped for him to be like, hey, I'm gonna die today. Good luck with everything.
Right. You know? You're not wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there was really a right solution here, unfortunately. It's gonna sting either way. The fact that he knew, and you know, in the last couple of chapters, Sadie had that conversation with him. She kind of came to understand all of the decisions he made, how difficult they were for him, but how necessary it was. And it was kind of nice that we got a little bit of that conversation with Carter this time, too. And you know, neither of them love what happened, but I think at the end of the day, they realize, like, this really was the only solution, as difficult as it is. And at the very least, you know, yeah, their parents are both dead, but they're not gone.
Right. Because of their situation as magicians, and because of their bonds to the gods, and how much they just helped the gods, which we'll get to that in a minute, they, you know, they do have the ability to see their parents. Not necessarily, they can't run down there and visit every time they want, but they're not completely gone. Mm-hmm. And so that is a benefit to their situation, is like, yes, their parents are technically dead and can't be with them every day making breakfast, but they are not gone either. So yeah, Julius is really excited to tell the kids how proud he is of them, how much the gods feel indebted to them. Like, they really knocked it out of the park. They did their job. They, you know, upheld their role in this whole thing without really knowing what they were doing. And seeing him, like, be proud dad, even with both of the kids kind of looking at him like a crazy person, because it's like, yeah, but you died, and, like, all this stuff happened, and, like, it was kind of funny. And Julius just kind of stays positive through the whole thing. Like, he's just smiling because he's seeing his kids and his kids survived, and that yeah. is a perfect day for him. So it's kind of funny to watch him just kind of be happy and in the moment. Anubis makes a comment about Sadie's sharp tongue that she takes umbrage with, is a little bit upset by. And
yeah, I love their banter
so much.
It's just romance book fodder. And like, you know, yes, I know they're 16 and like, it's never gonna be there, but like, that little banter is like what I live for in books.
It's so good. It's yeah. so good. But yeah, Julius goes on to tell them that they made all the right choices to get through the demon days to where they are now. And that's when their mom walks out and they see her and Julius together, which it makes even more sense why Julius made the choices he made.
Yeah.
You know, he lost his wife and was alone in this world, and he saw a path that allowed him to be with her again. Mm-hmm. Like, it makes
again, so romance fodder. Like, please give me these books.
Their mom Ruby is really glad that she got to experience Sadie's bond with Isis, and she was there, and those were her mom's thoughts mixed in there. And I loved that I love that she acknowledged that yeah. we kind of got that thing, and she says, I feel like I know you even better now.
That was wild to me, because I kind of assumed it was an echo of her. That's sort of what Sadie made it seem like, was that Isis kind of had a little bit of Ruby's, like, personality in her, like, her thoughts, things that she would say, even though, like, it was Ruby's voice, but this means that there's still, like, a slice of Ruby with Isis, because, yeah, Ruby says she knows Sadie more now, and that's just wild to me. So is there a slice of Sadie with Isis, too?
Well, I'm sort of starting to wonder if, like, if you bond or commune with a god, you're always kind of connected. Like,
yeah.
Isis doesn't have access to Sadie, and Sadie doesn't have access to Isis's power, but Isis has a connection with Sadie mm-hmm. that if someone else bonded with Isis right now, Sadie and Ruby probably would both feel it.
Yeah.
So it's like, if Isis is attached to another human being, there's a connection that they all kind of have, which yeah. is fascinating.
That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mom and Dad gift the Kane siblings Osiris's amulet, which looks a lot like a spinal column.
I kind of want this amulet, not gonna lie. That is my vibe.
It is definitely your vibe. It's called a Jed.
Yeah?
I'm calling it a Jed, which D-J-E-D.
I remember, because the nerd that I am, I did try to learn, like, hieroglyphics and stuff in college, because I was an art history major, and we studied Latin. Kevin always makes fun of me for this. And hieroglyphics. And there is, like, a certain sound for D and J together, because it's, like, a common thing. I can't remember what it is, so Jed it is.
Yeah, it's in there. Yeah, something like that. Before they can say more than a brief goodbye, like, they kind of, it's not really even a goodbye, it's just kind of them saying thank you for the amulet and all of that, they're whisked away with Anubis to a field of darkness, which Anubis kind of walks up to a random place and pushes, and suddenly there's this really bright light, and they walk into the palace of the gods. All the gods are there. So many of the gods are there, including a lot of the ones we've met. So Thoth, Hathor, Horus, Isis, tons of others. But I believe it's Carter who says no Bast sighting, though, which is upsetting to both of them.
Yeah. And I think it's really cute that even Carter was looking for her.
I know, right? Like, it would make sense if we were in Sadie's head and Sadie looked for Bast, right. But even Carter was hoping that they'd see her there, and she was not. Horus asks Carter one last time to join him and be one with him and ascend to the throne together, because they'll be stronger and have so much more power. But Carter refuses for now, saying that much later down the line, when he's mastered more of his power, that will be a card on the table then, but definitely not now. It did give me Percy vibes.
Yeah, a little bit. Sure.
Horus then takes the throne on his own and is not challenged by anyone in the court of all the gods that are present. And then they all the gods bow to the Kanes.
This was wild. Zeus would never. Zeus would never.
Like, absolutely never. He would never. Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of random, and Horus began the bow, and they all bowed to the Kanes and basically are saying thank you for all you've sacrificed, for all you did for us. You know, you kept us alive. You kept all of this as a possibility, and now we will continue, you know, to work together in the future. Horus promises the Kanes a gift from the gods that will reveal itself in the morning, and then after that, they kind of poof and are back on the mansion terrace where they were that morning having breakfast. So they're back in there, it's not so cruddy anymore, like, they've been repairing it is a structure again, but it's not, like, finished. I think Carter says they still have, like, a month's worth of repairs to do. And they go to bed that night and wake up the next morning, and the mansion is completely restored from, you know, stem to stern, like, every detail is done. And it also includes, like, new clothes and furnishings. They both have closets full of clothes, and, like, all the furniture and everything is back where it belongs and brand new looking and all of that. Which, I mean, that's a pretty great gift, especially for two kids who've spent the last month putting together the house as much as they can. I'm sure it's great, but both of them kind of mentioned that it feels a little like, it doesn't feel like everything. Like, they're like, you know, I kind of wish there was something more to it, but whatever. It's at that same meal that they're sitting out having breakfast that morning, and Amos comes out of the house and tells them that he is going to travel to the first gnome. He's going to visit the magic healers and try and get the help he needs to put everything behind him and to be able to move forward and be there for the kids.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, good on him for knowing what he needs.
Yeah, definitely.
I can feel, like, some of the adult characters in books like this feel obligated to, like, guide the kids and be there for the kids. But, like, I kind of respect that he knows they can handle themselves. And I need to go and talk to someone and get rid of this, you know, guilt and all that.
But also, he's literally, I mean, maybe he knows better at this point because of what's about to come up. But he is basically leaving them on their own with a baboon and a cat and a crocodile. So,
yeah.
Maybe not the best time to pop off to Egypt, but I understand where he's coming from.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like with everything they've gone through, he just trusts that they can handle themselves. Which, again, they are young. They are 16. Like,
younger, I think. I think they're 12 or 13.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like, yeah, like, they're pretty young. They don't necessarily know all that they need to know to keep themselves alive and happy, but we'll figure that out. He basically advises them to start recruiting, to start trying to find other young people that can be trained up and that can, that will be coming from their perspective rather than the magician's perspective, rather than the House of Life, and try and find people that are open to the gods and that would be open to hosting a god, because that's where the power is. That's how they're going to, you know, defeat Apophis when he finally makes his appearance. Sadie and Carter start discussing how hard it's going to be to travel on their own without a chaperone. Like, it was hard enough just trying to get train tickets to get back to Brooklyn without him. And he was there. He just wasn't, like, with it. And when, like, the moment they start talking about that, someone appears and is definitely the rest of their gift from the gods.
Yeah.
The bit that felt unsettled, something just didn't feel finished. Bast walks up and is like, "Hey guys.
Yeah.
How's it going?"
Thank goodness. I'm glad we didn't have to wait till book two to get her back.
I know. And honestly, this is the best of all worlds. I wonder if Amos was aware of this.
That's what I was saying. Like, maybe that's why he decided to go to Egypt, because he knew she was there and was basically like, they're not going to be completely on their own.
Like, this is what I need to do. Like, maybe the reason he had been hanging around is he felt guilty and couldn't bring himself to want to leave them by themselves. But the minute he felt that Bast was there or was on her way, he was like, this is my time. Like, this is time for me to go figure this out. They're in good hands. Bast is back. They're gonna, you know, go and have their adventures. They have their protector, their chaperone. And so Sadie has a long talk with her grandparents back in England. She does it, like, just on the phone or whatever. And Carter kind of, like, wrongly assumes that she misses home and wants to go back.
That was cute.
And she says, like, you idiot. Like, this is home. Like, I don't know what you're thinking, but, like, no, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying with you. And so that was really sweet. And then they start doing some adventuring. There's kind of a paragraph that talks about, like, all of the things that they're going to be doing and all the things that are going on in the world. It's like, it's not really like a closure paragraph. It's like, And now a whole bunch of stuff is going on, and time is passing, and they're going about their lives.
It feels very much like, and the adventure continues.
Yes.
Which I like books that kind of end like that, that leave it a little open.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that there's two more books anyway, but definitely. It's still nice.
Yeah. So, one of their adventures is, there's a school that starts kind of... not really, like, it's like Sadie can sense this one school. And so they go to visit the school, and they find a locker, and they put the Osiris's amulet in the locker and seal it with magic. It's in the Duat, so it's safe, but it can only be found by someone who is open to hosting a god, who is open to being trained, and someone who will be on their side. So, like, now they're just kind of waiting for a young child, someone, to find that amulet and will hopefully make their way to Brooklyn to, you know, start, so they can start training and start helping that person along their path.
Also, side note, I mean, I read these when I was fully an adult, but if I was, like, 12 or 13 reading these books, this was exactly the kind of book where I'd be, like, opening my locker to see if there was, like, an amulet in there, like, pretending that, like, it was just waiting for me, like, your Hogwarts letter and all that kind of stuff. Like, Rick really knows how to, like, fan the flames of a child's imagination, and I love that so much.
Oh yeah, any abandoned locker, empty locker in my school would have been a place I needed a place I needed to check. Or yeah, if I found myself at a visiting school and there was like an empty locker sitting there, like, I'd have to just peek, you know, because you never know. And that, you're absolutely right, like, that's so much fun.
Yeah.
And for a middle grade, you know, age kid to kind of have that sense of adventure, like, yeah, I can be in on this too. Like, maybe I'll find the amulet. Like, that's really cool. So, the last, like, few lines of the chapter of the book are Sadie and Carter telling us that they're sending this recording to a few people to see if it can get published, wink, wink, and that if you're reading this, this is just a part of the story, that the story hasn't finished yet, you know, and then we find out that Carter definitely wants to find Zia. That is top of, you know, top on his list of adventures he wants to have. But both of the Kanes are working together to get stronger because Apophis is doing the same and will be back, and they want to be ready. So that is pretty much where we finish this book.
Yeah, I loved, like, the little author's note at the end, too, where Rick was like, I mean, there's two options here. Either they did a lot of research or this is real. And he kind of goes through and says, like, which parts are actually real from Egyptian mythology. And I thought that was a really nice, like, bookend to the novel. Also, I did just Google Jed amulet to see if, you know, we could buy Osiris's spine. And you can.
Of course you can.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of figured you could, but it's kind of cool. So if you're looking for, you know, something to...
A little spooky.
Yeah. And to just remember the book and, you know, whatever, you can find them. So that's kind of cool.
That is really cool, actually. And that brings us to our favorite lines and our favorite moments. So, Karen, what was your favorite line?
This works out perfectly because mine is literally the one right before yours. So, they segue perfectly into each other. And it's when Anubis, kind of when he's about to let them go after being in the underworld, he kind of looks at Sadie and goes, "It's been stimulating."
Stop flirting.
Stop it.
You obvious flirt, you.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you? Yes. And then my line was Sadie's line back to him. And she says, "We're not done, mister. I expect you to look after my parents. And next time I'm in the land of the dead, you and I will have words."
I love it.
It is. It's so...
And I think he says, like, "I look forward to it."
Right? Like, "I look forward to that." Yeah. Hmm. Such a smooth talker, that Anubis. Hmm. Okay, and then what was your favorite moment?
All the little moments with Sadie and Carter, her approving of his new clothes, him being happy she's not going back to London. They've just come so far from the beginning of the book, and this chapter in particular had so many little moments of them being family, being siblings, and I really liked seeing that.
And I love that Carter, like obviously, you know, he trusts Sadie, but, like, he just assumes she'd want to go back to her grandparents. Like, "No, I don't want to go back with them. Like, you crazy. We've been through a bit, okay? I'm used to you. Deal with it." My favorite moment was definitely Best coming back, for sure. just, I'm glad that they lost so much. Like, they didn't lose her.
Yeah.
But then, with everything else they had to sacrifice and all the things that were kind of written in the stars and things they couldn't stop, Bast being able to come back to them, it's the perfect end way to end this book.
Yeah.
So, final thoughts. I really like the ending. I like that it's not all happy. It's a little bittersweet. It's a perfect Rick ending where there's some good, there's some bad, there's a lot left unsaid, there's a lot left to be determined, things are still in flux. There's a lot of possibilities where the next book can pick up with the stuff with, like, them trying to recruit new people, trying to figure out what's going on with Zia, trying to figure out what's going on with the House of Life and how they're going to relate to the House of Life. Like, are they going to be in concert with Desjardins at all? Or are they basically functioning outside of the House of Life? Like, what does all that mean? We know Amos was going to the first gnome to heal up. That means he's very much still attached to the House of Life. Like, what's his connection with the kids going to be? All of that. Like, there's just so much to work with for the next book. I'm really excited to see where things go from here. And, I mean, they've got Apophis kind of looming in the distance. We don't know if that means the second book we get another vision of him. Is he going to be like Kronos, where he just kind of keeps popping up again and again? Or will we not hear from him until it's time to do, like, big battle again? But yeah, I'm excited for who might find Osiris's amulet. Or to see if any of the other gods gift them amulets to, you know, if the other gods are ready to come and play in the realm of mortals again. Like, I'm curious to see if they have a lot of people who they need to train and that sort of thing. But yeah, like, that's an obvious in for a new character in the next book. So I'm very intrigued to see what kind of character adds to this dynamic.
Yeah, I love how it ended too. I like the idea of seeing the new recruits. And I like how Rick, you know, tied things up with Sadie's grandparents, laid out the road ahead of us with Zia, Apophis, Amos, everything like that. I love how Carter was like, please, no more amulets. I have enough amulets, which is pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, I think that it was a perfect wrap up and a perfect, like, we're gearing up for the next thing, which is a really good way to end a book without, like, a huge cliffhanger, but also leaving people wanting to read more. Because I definitely want to get into the next book at this point.
Definitely. Agreed. So I guess the last thing is kind of predictions. Like, do we have thoughts about what's going to happen in the next book or in the rest of the series? Mine are incredibly generic, and it's pretty much what I already just said. I do think book two, a strong plot line will be finding Zia.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to be, like, the only plot line or the central plot line, but it's going to be important. I feel like getting Carter and Zia finding Zia and being able to truly connect with the actual Zia is kind of paramount for him. He needs to know whether the Shabti was, like, an accurate portrayal of who Zia really is, or is this a person he doesn't know at all? And I think that's a question Carter really needs answered. And then, yeah, I'm excited about a new recruit. I want to see what this person, you know, who finds Osiris's amulet and comes to them in Brooklyn, like, I want to know what that is. I want to know what kind of power Osiris has. You know, we saw in this book how Carter and Sadie were both efficient and really good with different kinds of magic and had different strengths. So I'm curious what kind of strengths come with Osiris's magic.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think that those are good. Like, we probably are going to get those plot lines. I'm excited to see both of those pan out. I did look at the title for the next book because I couldn't remember what it was, but also figured it wouldn't be a spoiler for either one of us because usually in Rick's books, the title for the next one is in the back.
Yeah.
So the second book is called The Throne of Fire, which I found super interesting considering how many thrones have been mentioned already. And my initial thought was like, okay, could this take us back to the first gnome? Because Osiris and Horus have already taken their thrones. There's one throne left over, and that's the one in the human world.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, wait a second. Ra is the sun god, so I bet they're going to find him in this book. So I think that's going to be the major plot line, yeah. is that they need to track down Ra because they need him to be able to defeat Apophis.
Right, that's definitely true. Yeah, yeah. It would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Which is cool, like seeing a new god that we haven't seen before. He kind of went into retirement, so we don't know what it'll take to get him out. I think it could be a really interesting book.
I will just say, you know, doing a little thinking here about the actual words, like, throne of fire. The Red Pyramid was pretty... There was a Red Pyramid.
Yeah.
So, have we not seen the throne of fire yet?
Right.
Like, we've seen the throne of the... Throne of the dead, like, basically. And then the throne of the gods. And then there's the throne in the House of Life.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, are there others? Like, is it, like,
right.
almost the elements? Is it fire, water, earth, air? Like, are there yeah. four other thrones? And this book is really talking about Throne of Fire because it's important. Because of Ra, probably, you know? Like, I'm kind of wondering if maybe there are four other thrones that are kind of important. Not as important as the others, but, like, that have a place of prominence in the Egyptian pantheon. Like, maybe something like that.
But too yeah. many, too many thrones.
Yeah, there's a lot of thrones.
Musical thrones. That's what we're playing at
almost
this point.
Almost a Game of Thrones.
Oh, almost a Game of Thrones.
But,
I don't think we can use that as our title.
No, probably not. And speaking of authors who probably should have stopped writing, well, but, no, I'm just kidding. He's got, yeah, his books are crazy. But yeah, that literally wraps up our coverage of The Red Pyramid. And so, yeah, we're still, we'll give you guys a heads up as to what our plans are in the future. We will at some point be reading Court of the Dead. So if you want to get ahead of us now by reading it, that is 100%, you know, totally something you can do. But if you want to read along with us, we will be reading it at some point. So you can hold on to that and we'll definitely get back to you as soon as we have a solid plan. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Instagram at Prophecy Radio Podcast or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and we really appreciate them. You can leave us questions, comments, ideas for content you want to hear, or anything like that. We do have an email, so I will throw it to Karen to hear who emailed us.
Yes, so somebody new emailed in, which is very exciting. They say, "Hi, I'm Moon, a non-binary fanfic writer who loves Percy Jackson. I'm below age 15. I have a pet black cat I named Oreo. First of all, I've been a fan since the very beginning. I've always wanted to send an email, but I was kind of busy. Second, I'm so sorry about Callie. I can understand the pain of sick pets. I hope she's happy right now." I think she is because she's sleeping on her heated blanket that's literally I put out for her. So she's toasty and happy right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be attaching two pictures of my cat Oreo. Anyways, if you want to talk about all things Percy Jackson, I'm available, and cats, and, well, anything. Continue podcasting. It brightens up my life, and I know there will be a bunch of people who'd agree. Sincerely, Moon.
That's
so nice. I love that. And wait till you see this cat.
Oh, man.
So, first picture.
Cutiest cutie cat.
So fluffy.
So fluffy.
So
but
fluffy. Look at this second picture. Look at that face.
Oh.
Look at that face.
It's a GQ face.
Oh, my God. I love it.
Oh, Oreo.
Yes.
We love you so much.
Love a fluffy cat.
Thank you so much for sending
those. That was so nice. And honestly, it makes me so happy to see your pets. So everybody, please keep sending them in.
Yes, please, please, please. It warms the heart. So next time we will be talking Percy Jackson and the Olympians season 1. We're going to do a little revisit. We're just going to do some, you know, maybe some favorite stuff, favorite moments or things from the first season. Also just kind of giving us a little recap, a little refresh on what happened, so that we are more than ready for that premiere in December.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's closing in.
It's coming up quick.
Yeah.
So if you want to get a little bit of your rewatch done, if you want to, you know, be ready to talk about season one with us, you should have plenty of time. Get started now, and we will be excited to hear all of your thoughts.
Yeah.
For sure. So this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.